Listening to Thinking Real Estate, Bill and Laura Schlechte. I want to do a shout out to Jeff Hunt of Hunt Home Inspections, who just did an inspection for one of my clients, and apparently he listens to the radio show. So, hey, Jeff, thanks for following us. And then you wanted to shout out Bill too.
Pete and Mrs. Brown, and because they're listening this morning. And Pete's a longtime friend. I teach him how to play golf occasionally when we go out. But I always sing to him, Me and Mrs. Brown by Billy Paul. Me and Mrs. Brown.
So it's Pete and Jan Brown.
Pete and Jan.
Shout out.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about possession today. Is that what you still want to talk about?
Yeah. But before you do that, I do want to mention that we had remote notarization and remote witnessing in place as a result of Governor Whitmer's emergency orders. So, and I've done a number of documents using remote notarization so that people don't have to be in the same room. The advice from the State Bar Real Property Law Section is that as a result of the Michigan Supreme Court decision on October 2, we should no longer be using remote notarization and remote witnessing until we get some clarification as to whether or not it's going to continue. That clarification is probably going to have to come from the state legislature and the adoption of legislation which authorizes it. It's great. I mean, it's a wonderful way to avoid having to have people come into your office or a place where they're all physically present to notarize or witness a document. So hopefully, like Zoom hearings in court, Zoom mediation, things like that, it becomes embodied in our statutes. Let's hope. But anyway, right now, don't use remote. The advice is don't use remote notarization. Don't use remote remote witnessing.
Well, maybe we should talk about some of those things that affect real estate that are in that order. So can we do open houses? We can, correct?
Yeah. Right now, her orders are non-existent. You now have to look to county health departments and the state health department to determine exactly what orders are in place. And it's a hodgepodge between from county to county. Some counties have adopted regulations, health regulations, which track much of what Governor Whitmer had. Other counties have not. It's somewhat chaotic.
What about the Open Meetings Act?
You just got something from, I don't know who sent it to you. The Open Meetings Act and a statute that got adopted that was signed into law by Whitmer allowing public municipalities to continue to conduct meetings via remote means, has to have two-way communication, must allow anybody to participate or at least get access to it. But I haven't been through the statute with a fine-tooth comb, but that deals with municipal bodies. Doesn't have anything to do with private, well, for example, your practice of real estate or my practice of law.
Right, but I think it's important that citizens be able to voice their opinions about issues, and often the only time they have to do that is in front of city council, and that's kind of been taken away, even though you could write a letter. Some people find that challenging to do and express how they want to express within a letter versus...
Well, can't they send an email to the municipal body?
Well, same thing, email, in writing, let's put it in writing.
Yeah, a letter is just more cumbersome. Email could be done, but yeah, I mean...
I mean, I look at the same, the two is the same.
Yeah, but the statute allows municipal bodies to adopt their own rules, regulations, et cetera, using whatever the requirements are for adoption of, say, an ordinance. Although I don't think the requirements are stringent as option of the zoning ordinance, but probably my majority vote of the municipality to allow the meetings to continue by some virtual platform so that people don't have to be physically present. Unlike the U.S. Senate, where the Senate leader is declining to allow voting by remote, you must be physically present in the U.S. Senate. Not so the U.S. House of Representatives. But the other big news is that the MLS.
So the Multiple Listing Service, not everyone knows what MLS stands for.
Yeah, for realtors, the Realtor Multiple Listing Service, in which the realtors list all the properties which are for sale, made a huge, huge change in its definitions.
At least one.
I'm saying it sarcastically.
Right. Well, at least one definition.
Yeah, you want to tell the listening public what that change is?
So instead of your main bedroom with an attached bathroom, which is used to be defined as a master bedroom.
It was always called the master bedroom. You have a master bedroom, and then you've got the bedrooms for kids or guests, et cetera. Guest bedroom. The MLS, is this just the Jackson MLS?
No, it sounds like it's a state. It sounds like it's a national move.
The National Association of Realtors. So you can no longer call a master bedroom a master bedroom. It is now to be because of the connotations that it is gender biased in favor of men or males. The master. It's not
I always thought I was the master anyway.
Yeah.
I know I am. What am I talking about?
Yeah. Okay. At any rate, it's not called master's bedroom. It's called the master bedroom, like a master switch. But for some reason, the realtors have decided that it is gender biased in favor of men. So now to make it gender neutral, you no longer see in a listing service master bedroom plus two guest bedrooms or whatever it is, or really nice master bedroom or nice master suite. It's now going to be called the primary bedroom or the primary suite.
And actually, I'm okay with that only because sometimes the definition of a master bedroom had an attached bathroom. And it was always confusing if the attached bathroom had a second entrance to it from another bedroom, what they called Jack and Jill bathroom. Was it still a master bedroom because it all had to do with privacy, right? So I don't have a problem with them neutralizing that definition because my primary bedroom may be the one that's on the first floor and the bathrooms are upstairs.
Look, I teach fair housing. I'm a firm believer in fair housing, equal treatment, non-discriminatory practice and laws, but we are stretching things a little bit.
Yeah, well...
Wait. So what do I call a switch now? For electricity,
primary.
No longer a master switch.
It's the primary switch.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. That's the electrician's problem. But I'm okay because it makes it easier for me to define it within the MLS.
All right. So
makes the search easier. The other question before you change it, and have time to get into possession.
We were going to talk about possession. Right. We have a shortened program.
But because you started with the... executive orders from Whitmer and all of that. How does the eviction process stand?
No, there's no change in that. The eviction, the state mandate against evictions expired on July 27th, and then it was left to the courts, the district courts, to formulate a plan to get evictions up and running, and there was a priority list of where the property's being damaged, there's a health hazard, et cetera, and then working down to just normal evictions. That hasn't changed as far as the state is concerned, but the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control nationally, adopted a regulation prohibiting any evictions. This has nothing to do with federally related mortgages, et cetera. Any evictions where the tenant would provide a statement that the tenant was out of a job due to COVID-19, had been looking for work, had insufficient income, et cetera. There's like a 5-point.
So the tenant has to provide an affidavit to the landlord in order to stay the eviction, the tenant would have to provide an affidavit to the landlord.
Okay, it's not an affidavit.
Okay, what is
it? It's a statement.
All right, a statement.
Yeah, there's a big difference between a statement and an affidavit.
Okay, I felt like you kind of just jumped in the middle and didn't explain that the tenant has to provide, in order to not be evicted, the tenant has to fill in the statement. And the statement states?
The statement states exactly what I just said, that the tenant is out of work due to COVID-19, has been unable to return to work because either the work is unavailable or because they have COVID-19 or they're taking care of a family member that has COVID-19. That they don't have sufficient income to be able to pay the rent. I don't have the affidavit or the statement in front of me, but it's a very straightforward CDC. They actually gave a sample form. So what has to happen is a landlord and what the courts should be doing, and again, I have not started an eviction since this CDC order was adopted. I get these blurbs through the Real Property Law section occasionally about the district courts, but different district courts are handling them completely differently, and I just don't know off the top of my
head. Is the Jackson court system open?
Yes.
So I can go in there and file an eviction as long as I fall within the criteria?
Yes, but you better make certain before you file it that you have that you inform the tenant that here's the eviction. This is what's going on.
No, I'm just sticking with the fact that the courts are open.
Yeah, courts are open.
Okay.
Yeah, the circuit court is actually doing a great thing in that the circuit court is allowing us to do e-filing. It's Betsy up there that is the clerk I've been dealing with, and she's been absolutely phenomenal to work with. The district court is not allowing us to do e-filing, but they are allowing people to go in, have to wear masks, maintain social distancing or separation. We just filed a district court forfeiture action a little while ago, and Jackie went into the court and filed the documents there. I actually went to the Combs Circuit Court to file some documents a week or so ago, and they're allowing access to the courthouse and access to the clerk's office. Probate court, same thing. Probate court's open. You can go in and file. Again, you have to wear a mask. I'd call in advance, make sure that they're open and available, that they're not requiring appointments. But, you know, I do stuff all over the state, and so different courts are handling things very differently. The Michigan Supreme Court has directed all the courts to adopt procedures and protocols to deal with the caseloads that they have. And one of the real difficult issues of handling or having jury trials, some courts are now just starting to figure out how the procedures are to do that.